Welcome to the Bone Coach Show, dedicated to helping you understand all things related to diet, lifestyle, bone health, and how you can live and thrive with low bone density and osteoporosis. I'm your host, Kevin Ellis, certified health coach, health and wellness speaker, and above all else, your bone coach. After being diagnosed with osteoporosis in my early 30s, I transformed my health through diet and lifestyle and now help my clients and community members do the same through my online coaching practice, BoneCoach.com. Look, there are no quick and easy cures for low bone density, but the choices we make every single day can have a powerful impact on our bones, our health, and our general well-being. I'll share the research, interview the experts, and help you figure out how to get the conditions right in your body so you can better your bones through diet and lifestyle. Short disclaimer, I'm not a medical doctor and this show should not be considered medical advice. Always consult with your healthcare team before making medical decisions and changes to your diet and lifestyle. With that being said, let's get on with the show.
We are not in a safe world right now. We have to create our own safety with our deliberate active choices. We get to take our health into our own hands. No one is doing it for us because, you know, the ADA, the American Dental Association, the American Medical Association, they have turned a blind eye on amalgam fillings until now. And then during the pandemonium of COVID, they finally quietly released a statement that said, oh yeah, mercury fillings are not so great for you. But the damage has been done. And the municipal water districts, our government is not in a position to clear all that up for us. We have to get smart about water filtration ourselves. We have to get smart about dental health ourselves. We get to get smart about reclaiming our gut health ourselves in order to protect our futures.
If you haven't done so already, especially if you're newly diagnosed with osteopenia or osteoporosis, or if your most recent bone density scan still showed more bone loss, go ahead and pause this episode and head over to BoneCoach.com to sign up for your free 7-day osteoporosis kickstart guide. That's going to give you everything you need step by step by step over the next 7 days to get on the path to improvement and stronger bones. You won't want to miss that. So pause this right now, head over to BoneCoach.com, and I'll be here as soon as you get back. Welcome, welcome to this episode of the Bone Coach Show. Joining us today to explore bile, our secret weapon, and liquid gold detergent is Sinclair Canale. Sinclair is an award-winning expert on chronic digestive conditions, CEO of DetoxRejuvenation.com, host of Your Health Reset podcast, and survivor of complex chronic illness. She's the founder of Meditation RX, a meditation system for people working on their health. Her mission is to help people to reclaim their health and rediscover their creative power so they can be who they came here to be. She's built several successful businesses in health, personal development, and lifestyle, and designed thousands of products for big box and boutique interior design. She's already living her dreams, running a busy practice and teaching wellness professionals how to build their online platforms when she was hospitalized back in 2010. After struggling for years without a proper diagnosis or treatment plan, Sinclair vowed to share the cutting-edge solutions that helped her to heal. Today, she and her partner, Michael Spandell, specialize in resolving the root causes behind complex chronic illness and digestive issues. Together, they've helped thousands of people to get their lives back and mentored hundreds of practitioners to do the same. Sinclair's greatest love, aside from Michael, is helping healers and visionaries to bring their work into the world. She's a tireless advocate for the right to choose your own health destiny and supports the practitioners who are creating medical sovereignty for the masses. And she's just an all-around great person, too. So, Sinclair, thank you so much for joining us. Great to have you here.
Thanks. It's hard to hear that without blushing. Appreciate the intro.
Yeah, no, this is going to be really fun for us. So, and we're going to talk about a topic that I know is a passion of yours. Detoxification is super important. And one of the most critical elements of that is bile. It's something that's so, so important. And before we get into that, what I'd like to start with is, how did you move from, you know, all these successful endeavors to having your chronic health issues to then, you know, focusing mainly on detoxification, helping people with chronic conditions work through them?
Thanks for asking that. It's weird to look back and see that because it was such a long road. And I know for folks listening that, you know, for many of us, our health journey is a lot longer of a path than we would like, especially because we're oriented towards like quick fixes, you know, and we think that if we can just apply all of our desire and our effort that we can, you know, hit the fast forward button. And for me, that was not the case. It took me a long time, many, many years of searching and trial and error. And, you know, Michael, I was very fortunate to have my partner searching 5 continents for solutions for me. And he just refused to give up, thankfully. So it was, you know, it turned out to be a combination of root causes that have actually impacted so many of us today. And the expressions of distress are myriad, but the root causes are few. And so some of us may become aware of digestive issues or osteoporosis. That might be our diagnosis. That's our wake-up call, or thyroid issues. And we're all, you know, or even mast cell activation and histamine sensitivity. You know, we're all each having our own dashboard light, you know, that looks different. Like your warning light might be different than mine was, but it turns out that we have some very similar exposures that are all compromising our health, and we can do something about it. So it was a long road to figure it out. Lots and lots of trial and error, but it's so joyful to share it now.
And that's such an important message for everybody, is that it's never going to be perfect the first time around. You will not get the answer right off the bat in most cases, right? There has to be trial and error. It's going to be part of the process. Just be patient with yourself, be kind to yourself along the way. I know that, you know, we're going to talk about bile and how important that is for our health. Some people might not actually even know what bile is. So why don't we start by, can you tell us what bile is and the role that it plays?
I would love to. It's a super gross word, so it's hard not to have a little bit of aversion to it. but actually, this is one of the most important substances in the body. And the more we understand it and love and appreciate what it does for us, the more we actually can set ourselves free on our health journey. So bile is actually, I call it our liquid gold detergent. And it is made in the liver and stored in the gallbladder. And it's released when we have a meal and food gets processed through the stomach. And then that food and the gastric juices that were used to break it down enter the small intestine from the stomach. The gallbladder meets that super acidic material with alkaline bile. And the gallbladder and the stomach are always talking so that those can be met with perfect chemistry. So, and of course you have the pancreas also chipping in with those great enzymes and sodium bicarbonate, but we think of the pancreas as the one that's creating that alkalinity, like, oh, we're going to settle down all that material from the stomach so the small intestine can go to work. And it's actually the bile. So the bile that now we now understand is not just about helping us to break down foods, but it is also has cancer anti-morphogenic properties. So we can actually reduce our, you know, potential outcomes of cancer as we increase bile flow again. It helps to protect our gut motility. So people with SIBO and IBS and chronic digestive issues generally don't have enough bile flow. And of course, bile itself is also flushing out toxins from the liver. It's one of our body's favorite way to excrete unwanted material so that it can go out through our bowel movements, because that's a lot more of a resilient way for the body to deal with it than for it to get processed through the kidneys. Kidneys are delicate. They are not as easily regenerated. So this is our body's, whatever can possibly come out through the bile will, as long as the bile keeps flowing. So that's why it's our liquid gold detergent, but it's expensive to make. The body wants to reuse bile salts. 95 to 97% of bile salts, it wants to recycle those, bring them back up, make fresh bile, and then have it get stored in the gallbladder again. This is a really big problem in today's day and age, because we are getting exposed to environmental toxicants in our air, food, and water that significantly slow down bile. Bile salts, these little crystals, are suspended in liquid from the liver's very, very delicate chemistry, okay? And it takes just a little bit of phthalate from your air freshener, or just a little bit of halogen from, you know, the fluoride or your something in your tap water, just a little bit of something from your dryer sheet, you know, that you put in for a fresh scent, to have that bile salt that's suspended in liquid drop out of liquid form and start to get sticky, viscous, and slow. And the damage builds up over time. You can't break down those fat soluble vitamins that we need. We desperately need them for our bone health, for example. So as soon as the bile flow starts to slow down, our health outcomes start to slow down as well. And we start to see this onset of chronic illness in many, many different forms. So I am on a quest to help people love their bile again and to reclaim free-flowing bile.
And in situations where, you know, so we've got the liver producing bile.
Yeah.
And the gallbladder is storing that bile. And what happens if somebody has their gallbladder removed?
It's a great question. So we can function without the gallbladder. We have many women come to us in their mid-60s, late-60s, early-70s, mid-70s, who have had been going without a gallbladder for quite some time, decades even. But the problem is, once the gallbladder is removed, it doesn't necessarily remove the originating problem, the originating issues. So it may resolve the acute issue where you got so flared up, it became unsafe and something had to be done immediately, right? But then you have nowhere for the bile to get stored. And that gallbladder was supposed to be holding the bile and modulating the pH, condensing it down, waiting for the those digestive moments to flush it in to meet that stomach acid with the food. It's supposed to be working in this perfect harmony together. And instead, that bile is going to leak out from the liver ongoing into the small intestine, and your body loses part of its ability to self-regulate. So you're still functioning. You can still achieve phenomenal health outcomes without a gallbladder, but it takes being proactive and understanding how the system works. And a big part of that is understanding why 41% of people who have their gallbladder removed still have serious abdominal pain issues persist. Because liver is still stagnated, bile is still not flowing well through the liver itself. Therefore, you have all these downstream issues in the digestive tract.
And how does somebody know, you know, if they've got a situation where their gallbladder is not functioning properly?
It's a great question. So one of the things that's difficult to ascertain is those early stages of low gallbladder functioning. In fact, if you just look at traditional liver markers on, you know, your basic blood panels, you're not going to be understanding the full picture because the liver can lie to you. It can be reduced in its own efficiency down to 60%. And some experts are, you know, project even potentially less than that in terms of its ability to manage and self-regulate and by extension to feed the gallbladder what it needs and still appear within normal ranges. So we don't have great early detection methods, but what you can do is assess your own symptomology so that you know whether or not it's time to look deeper. And gallbladder congestion, gallbladder distress, and liver distress are basically, you know, one and the same because they are so tightly interrelated. So if you have digestive issues, if you tend towards constipation or diarrhea, because they are two sides of the same coin, if you tend towards bloating, especially after eating, if you have dark circles under your eyes, if you had acid reflux or even GERD, if you have sensitivity to certain foods that are high in fat and therefore require free-flowing bile to break them down, like, oh, I can't eat that. That's too heavy. I need to eat light. I need to eat light. A lot of us start to say that. You know, we start to avoid certain foods. You know, a response to alcohol that's like, oh my God, alcohol will just flatten me. Even one glass of something occasionally, I cannot do it. You know, a resilient liver and a healthy gallbladder should be able to manage that. But if you have liver pain, so a generalized swelling or liver discomfort, liver is very large. It's on your upper right side. It's higher than you think it is, ladies. It's actually up under the ribs, right under the right breast, and, you know, wraps all the way around, you know, along the midline. It's the largest traditional organ in the body. So it's more of a generalized pain, usually in the liver, but it's that pinging that some of you will go, oh, I do get a pinging on the upper right side sometimes. That's the gallbladder.
And you could have even referred pain back in your shoulder blades too, right?
Yes, you can. Exactly. Yeah. A lot of right side joint pain, or it's not just the shoulder. It can actually travel down the arm. We think, oh, that's about the joint itself. Not necessarily. You can think about it as up along your upper right back, and even down to your right hip. If you have right side pain, please look into this more. It can also even be as high up as like your trapezius and in your, you know, your cervical vertebrae right in there. Yeah.
And in terms of supporting healthy bile flow, I know one of the things I talk about all the time is arugula. It's one of my favorite leafy greens. It's a bitter food. Bitters are so important. I think the only other bitter that I would say most people would incorporate into their plans would be coffee. But what are some other maybe ways people can support healthy bile flow?
This is a great question because so many of us, as bile flow starts to slow down, we develop sensitivities. So if you have food sensitivities, and by extension, if you're on the rashy side or you get rosacea, you know, and that has developed over time in the last couple of decades or gotten worse, those are other signs about this. And you may just be blaming the foods. Like you may say, oh, I have a sensitivity to citrus. I have to stay away from those high histamine foods. Well, those are bitters. And your liver is in charge of actually breaking down histamine, and the fact that you would have a reaction to citrus, which should be helping the liver to encourage bile flow and by extension bile flow in the gallbladder itself, that's a real sign that you have dysregulation. So even if you're histamine sensitive, there are lots of bitters that are lower in histamine, but just be aware of that because I talk about bitters, you know, in layers, because I would love to see you use citrus on a regular basis. If you're healthy, you should be able to tolerate coffee just fine as long as it's not mold contaminated, right? And that's great. You know, yes, it's true that cacao or chocolate is also technically a bitter, but let's not get too heavy into high sugar stuff, right? But even cinnamon, asparagus, cauliflower. These all have artichoke is the favorite. All of these have bitter compounds in them that really help the body. But the general rule of thumb is if it tastes bitter to the tongue, it's sending that signal down to the gallbladder. Hey, we're going to be digesting soon. Get ready to release bile. And we have lost the art of loving those bitter greens, those bitter foods on a regular basis in our meals. And so because we're so oriented towards salt and sugar in our culture these days, it really benefits us to bring back, like you say, the arugula, for example.
Yeah. And some of those bitter foods also contain, are they're high oxalate foods also. Mm-hmm. And I think oxalate is a really important topic that we can talk about because a lot of times when people have issues with bone health or osteopenia or osteoporosis, oxalates are a real big focus. It's an anti-nutrient, obviously, that binds up bone healthy minerals. Yeah. And some of the foods that people are consuming are these higher oxalate foods. But we also know that oxalate is not just from the food that you're taking in. Could you talk a little bit about oxalate and the liver and gut health and things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is something that's really important to understand because we see this sort of triangulation with chronic digestive issues, low motility in our bile and bone health, actually, because we need free-flowing bile to be breaking down our fat-soluble vitamins as well as absorbing our calcium for optimum bone health. And when we don't have that, we actually, as the bile becomes more stagnant, yes, the bones become more vulnerable over time, and so does your digestive tract because your bile is increasing gut motility the whole way down. It's telling your small intestine, we got to keep things moving. It's helping with stool formation and complete bowel movements. And in that way, it is very much protecting our gut microbiome, our natural balance of good bugs that help us break down foods, that help, you know, what they excrete at the end is vitamins, right? As they support, you know, the production of neurotransmitters. The bad bugs, so to speak, when you have lower gut motility, lower bile flow, they start to proliferate, things get out of whack. Those are your candidas, your yeasts, you know, fungal, overgrowths like that. And the problem with those is that they dump oxalates. Your candida is actually, it's not just creating sugar cravings for you or skin issues or fatigue. It's also dumping oxalates as part of what they excrete. And those are a real issue, and they can actually actively contribute to liver congestion and also joint pain. And they have also been correlated in many studies now with bone health issues. So the thing that we want to be aware of, though, when we're talking about this is, why is the candida allowed to set up shop? Low bile flow, right? But also toxin exposure. So it's why you see mold exposure for women having such a strong correlation to osteoporosis down the road, because mold contamination in the body will shut down the liver very quickly, reduce efficiency there, suppress the immune system, slow down bile motility over time. That means other funguses are just proliferating and your bile is moving slower and slower and not able to break down those fat soluble vitamins and those minerals you desperately need for healthy bone growth, right? So it's a very interesting systemic, it's like a vicious circle, because more liver stagnation means more candida. More candida means more oxalates, less vitamins and minerals absorbed, less efficient bone protection. It's really fascinating to watch. And it could have all started with your college dorm room where you had a moldy closet, or, you know, when you were raising your kids in the first 5 years, you were in your late 20s. It was like, I don't have time to deal with this leak under the faucet. Will we stop the leak? Yeah, there's a little bit of mold and I cleaned it up with bleach myself. Please don't do that. Please, please, please don't do that. And yeah, it's still inside and it was allowed to set up shop, and it's time to get proactive about getting it out, restoring your bile flow and being deliberate about oxalate intake in the time being. And I say that very, you know, intentionally. High oxalate foods aren't bad, ladies. They're not. You know, a lot of high oxalate foods are considered very healthy. We're holding them up as our superfoods right now. The top 8 oxalates, for example, are sweet potatoes, kale, you know, beets, beet greens. These are lovely foods. We just want to be moderate in our intake with them if it turns out that they are contributing to, for example, your joint pain. Just want to gently, deliberately lower the intake of them a little bit while you're going after and, you know, rebuilding your gut and supporting your bones.
That's great. And then in terms of, you talked about mold there, are there any other root causes that kind of take on the liver and impair its function that we need to be aware of?
This is a great question. So one of the ones that I want to touch on today is the heavy metal exposure that's so common for many of us. For example, you know, still on the topic of candida and oxalate dumping, your mercury amalgam fillings from a couple decades ago could have been the sensitizing event that created that candida overgrowth, because candida will help stabilize mercury. So half the weight in volume of amalgam fillings is mercury. Half the weight. And half of that evaporates into the body in the first 7 years. And guess what? The CDC tells us, and the WHO agrees, the WHO, that there is no legal safe level of mercury in the body. A little bit goes a long way in terms of disrupting our thyroid health, suppressing our liver efficiency, and distressing the liver, slowing down bile flow, and yes, allowing candida to set up shop and go nuts. So it could be that simple. For many of us, like for me, that was a major domino in my health journey. It's not exotic in terms of exposure. It's really every day. Over 100 million Americans have mercury amalgam fillings, or had them at one point. And what's important to understand about that is mercury, as it gets mobilized in the body, we don't have a strategy to get rid of that. The liver tries to dump it into the bile, but it cannot release it into the stool. It gets taken up again too quickly in the gut lining, gets retoxified, you know, throughout the body as it circulates, goes back into storage, and damage is created all the way along. 80% of mercury that is mobilized in the body stays in the body. We're very inefficient excretors of it. So that is one thing that can really, you know, be a serious domino for folks. Another one that's super important, and I'm sure you talk about it all the time, is lead. Mm-hmm. And, you know, lead and calcium really compete for those receptor sites on the bone, right? You know, similar in size, sure. But lead is in many cases an even better fit than calcium. So it's easy to displace that calcium and get stored over time. And you want to be really intentional about this stuff as you're hearing this. I want you to think of this like being a detective, right? Because all this information can set you free. You don't have to act on it right now. Gather this information, you know, work with a practitioner or join the program that's right for you to, you know, craft that plan for yourself as the time is right. This took a long time to set up shop. And, you know, if we decide we're going to be detectives and take our time and make the right choices for us, then everything can, you, this can even be a joyful journey. So just know that as I'm laying out all these scary, awful things, because I'm about to share a pretty scary statistic with you. And I want you to hang with me. So there are actually over 12,000 municipal districts in the United States that have the same levels of lead as Flint, Michigan, or higher. We are not in a safe world right now. We have to create our own safety with our deliberate active choices. We get to take our health into our own hands. No one is doing it for us because, you know, the ADA, the American Dental Association, the American Medical Association, they have turned a blind eye on amalgam fillings until now. And then during the pandemonium of COVID, they finally quietly released a statement that said, oh yeah, mercury fillings are not so great for you. But the damage has been done. And the municipal water districts, our government is not in a position to clear all that up for us. We have to get smart about water filtration ourselves. We have to get smart about dental health ourselves. We get to get smart about reclaiming our gut health ourselves in order to protect our futures.
I always encourage people to go to Environmental Working Group's website, check out the, I think it's ewg.org/tap water or something like that. And you can punch in your zip code. You can look up what the contaminants are in your area and see what it is that you actually need to address. And you brought up something else that was really important, which is, you know, sometimes you have to share some of the, you have to share the downsides too. You have to, some of the negative is going to come out when we're discussing these things or the scary statistics and things like that. You have to be aware of some of those things, but don't let that defeat you, right? There are things that you can do. You can address those things. You just have to be educated and aware about them.
Absolutely. And you know that I'm so glad you brought up the EWG tap water database. I love that thing. We use it all day long. Yeah. One of the things that you will see in there is if your water, it has radiation contamination. This is really important to understand because that absolutely affects our bone health. We think about radiation like it's something exotic and far away like Fukushima or Chernobyl. And the truth is most of us that are affected by radiation actually are getting it in tiny amounts over time. Right. So one client that came to us, she had this story that she was unfixable. Right, that she'd done the whole functional medicine celebrity route, and she was like, no one can fix me. She had, you know, a lot of hair loss. She was covering it up with wigs. She had had thyroid issues for 30 years, you know, serious gut issues, liver stagnation, and severe osteoporosis. And one of the things that we discovered right away was like, well, what's in your water? Because all of that triangulates to radiation. So she had mold that had been incorrectly mediated in her basement and in her bedroom closet, and she had radiation in her tap water, and she was using a filter that was not filtering out that radiation. She had been sold a line from, you know, the salesman, and I'm sure it was great for many things, but it couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. So these are actually, our health picture today is complex, but it's not actually mysterious. All of this is figure outable, all of it.
Love that. Love that. It's empowering to know that, you know, you can figure these things out. What are there any other changes that you can make to your home environment, maybe to protect your health, your bones, anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we touched on water filtration. Please assess your water and look it up on the tap water database. If you are on well water, you do not get a hall pass. I'm sorry. You need to investigate and do a test, because if you bought your home, even a few years ago, you know, the and you got that wonderful water quality test, it's time to test again. And you want to do so on a regular basis. We recommend distilled water and resupplementing with trace minerals so that you are actually sure that your water is without radiation and without those pharmaceuticals, right? Those trace pharmaceuticals can be very damaging to us over time. And our municipal water facilities are not in a position to filter those out. Michael, my partner, had a terrible bone break. He had a very gently to jump out of the way of a car that careened around a corner last year, fell and landed wrong on his hip and broke his bone. We went, that's not normal. You're 40. What's happening here? And it turned out, and we knew already that this was an issue for his liver, but he had had acne as a kid. So you see where this story is going. Right? So he got put on Accutane for a couple of years, which completely shut down his liver, his ability to, you know, absorb those fat soluble vitamins and calcium, right? Because it shut down his bile flow and his bone health suffered significantly for it. So that's an example of an active prescription, right? Where a choice was made and then, you know, some reclamation needs to happen. It's not just Accutane. A lot of pharmaceuticals will do that to you. What I love about you, Kevin, and how you are such a tireless advocate for this is to know your pharmaceuticals, right? So just have to get that in because I really want to acknowledge you for it. I think you're doing amazing work in the space around that. So back to the environment, I'm just underscoring the pharmaceutical piece because you want water that is without that, right? And you also want to be smart about mold in your home. So you got to have things like leak detectors, you know, under the bathroom faucet. We were just in our last home. We just moved out of it a few months ago into a new home. And we discovered the hard way that we had a fresh water leak that had started growing mold in our guest bathroom. And we only found out because we were moving. And what's weird is I got this big spidey sense like, we gotta go. We have to move and we have to do it now. And Michael's like, no, we don't. This is a crazy time to move. Like, we got to go. And that was absolutely my inner mold signal going off, you know, as a mold survivor.
Uh-huh.
So you think about these things. You think about water leaks and seals in your car. You think about window seals around your workspace at work. I can't tell you how many, you know, commercial landlords are negligent about this. You've got to be your own advocate. You know, look for the water damage because where there's water damage, there's usually mold. You want to check your attic spaces, your basements. You want to maintain a healthy HVAC system. You know, these, and yeah, this stuff sounds expensive. One of the cheapest things you can do to protect your home health and by extension, your health and your future bone health is just open your windows every day because there are spores in the natural world's air that will actually keep mold in check and help break it down. So, this is just one of those things. There's something that you can do at every income level to protect your future bone health. We think water filtration. We think air quality because of mold. It's so good at shutting down bioflow and therefore shutting down your ability to absorb those minerals and vitamins that you must have for bone health. And then, of course, the EMF issue, right? So EMFs slow down tissue regeneration, period.
And what are EMFs? Just for people that aren't familiar with them, what are EMFs?
Yeah. So we often talk about EMFs like they're cell phone radiation and cell tower radiation and by extension, Wi-Fi and smart devices. And that is one type of EMF for sure. But there are other types as well. There's the fields that come off of your wires, like in the wall, in your circuits. And you could have a wiring error and not know it and actually be getting zapped. But other types of EMF include dirty electricity. So it's like any extra noise that's on your wires. And that gets there by from cell phone towers, from smart appliances, from, you know, your neighbor down the block who's like a radio enthusiast and he has like 30 antique radios and you don't know it. Solar panels are a far more common exposure to dirty electricity at this time because they aren't filtered. The electricity is not converted cleanly in most setups. So it like where I live in Southern California, it's a really big problem and it can just destroy people's health. So you want to get EMF literate. And if this is a new topic for you, one of the things you can do is just think about electrical stuff around you as a question, like if it's necessary or not. Like, do you need that wireless printer that sits right next to your desk chair on your desk? Does it have to be on all day long? Like, how often do you use your printer? You could unplug that, or you could at least turn it off. You want to think about reduction. Like, it's thinking about, how can I make my life easier? How can I make my a little bit easier on my body? And you can prioritize just your sleeping area. We have flooded the bedroom with electronics in the last decade or so. And it is staggering what an impact they have on our ability to regenerate tissue while we are asleep. So one of the things you can do is just simplify. And you're thinking, oh, my husband is never going to get that smart TV out of the bedroom. He loves that thing. That's his quality time at night. I understand. But you got to turn that thing off. And in many cases, you actually have to unplug it for it to stop emitting Wi-Fi at you and blasting you while you sleep. So this is important because you may not be able to see the wavelength of Wi-Fi visually, like we can see the wavelengths of light and color, but your brain actually still sees it. So it's like asking your brain to sleep with the lights on. So I always start with reduction. Let's keep this simple and basic. What can you turn off while you're sleeping? What can you move away from the bed? Can't tell you how many women who are chronically ill come to us. We have them take photos in our group courses to get started. Take a photo of your sleeping area. And that's where we start. And they often have cordless phones right by their head. That's emitting the same energetic signature as a 747 jet engine. That's too much for the brain. Isn't that weird?
Well, this is amazing that I'm glad you're sharing. I'm glad you're sharing this with us because, and that's probably one of the reasons why when I go out of town to the national parks or something and I'm completely unplugging, I feel a little bit more re-energized. That may be one of the reasons too. You brought up something when you were talking about Accutane also. Mm. And I think, you know, I actually took Accutane when I was a kid also. And that probably had an impact at that point. But I always talk about in our younger years, how important it is to, especially if you're listening, you got kids, you got grandkids, help them support reaching that peak bone mass from such a young age, because you're putting on 90% of your bone mass by the time you turn age 18. The remaining 10% approximately fills in by the time you're 30. So those are perfect years to help support healthy bone development. And you have to be aware of these medications and things like that could be a contributing issue. So instead of maybe taking the Accutane or taking whatever the other medication is, what could we do? Maybe take a more natural approach to addressing some of those issues. I know that if I could go back, I probably would have done things a little bit differently if I had that education, but that's okay.
Yeah. One of the things that I really love to emphasize for folks that want to take a natural approach with something like acne, especially for teenagers, you know, because they are, it's such a critical stage of development, is for us to understand that it's not, it's a big misnomer that acne is hormonal. That's most acne is not hormonal at all. Okay. And you always want to start with healing skin from the inside out. It's actually a gut problem, not a skin problem. And I know when you have kiddos and they are just dying inside because they don't feel, you know, good about themselves and how they look, it's such an important age to be building self-confidence. You've got to do it from the ground up. You got to do it from the inside out. And so we always encourage adding things in to the diet, adding gut support in that they're able to take before you start taking things away, right? It's because this doesn't have to be a fight, but consider how much more difficult it will be to influence them once they leave the house and they're in college or they're struggling in their young adult years, just trying to figure it all out. Your influence will actually go down significantly. And it's very painful to try to support a young person who has health issues once they have left the home. So as unfun as it is to consider doing this with a teenager, I want you to reconnect to your resolve and see this as your last huge opportunity. And you have to find those small wins, measure it with small wins. So consider adding in foods that they'll tolerate that do not have toxic byproducts that actually support and aid digestion that have healthy fats in them versus rancid seed oils that are so, you know, inflammatory for the skin, right? And it's a, there's a whole art to it, but that's the approach that I would love for you to consider taking, because it could change their lives.
Some of those digestive issues and issues with their gut could have started from when they were young kids and they had the ear infection, or they had whatever and they took a bunch of antibiotics. All of those things could be contributing factors to that too. So,
absolutely. It certainly was for me. I was one of those kids with a lot of ear infections. And that, you know, things went downhill from there very quickly.
Sure. And then also when you're trying to get younger kids to incorporate things like that, and I love that you're talking about how can we get them to incorporate healthier foods from a young age? It doesn't just have to be like this one health food you have to eat. How can we make it fun for them? How can on Sunday we plan out meals for the week? We sit down, we find some good recipes that they might actually like, and we say, hey, which ones do you want to try this week? And then we build those out, or maybe you prep for those in the early week. So
I love that you're saying that, because kids are much smarter than we give them credit for. If you talk to them about how corporations are putting in things that are addictive for them, like the red dyes, like the excitotoxins, like the MSG, they get it. They get it from a very young age. Lisa Genza is actually really good at teaching children about food issues today and how to create their own food independence from 6 years old and up, so that they are contributing to the family and they want to learn how to cook. They want to learn how to make healthy choices. So go check her out. She's a fantastic resource.
That's great. That's great. And then for you, Sinclair, I mean, we've covered so many amazing things in this episode. This has actually been really fun for me. So bile, we've talked about mold exposure, heavy metals, the importance of detoxification, some of the actionable things that you could do to make adjustments in your home environment. This has been great. And then let's talk about, you've got some amazing programs and things like that too. Let's talk about what those are, where people can find those, and that'd be great.
Awesome. Thanks. Well, I'm the host of Your Health Reset podcast. You can always find me there. We have a phenomenal, our flagship program is called Rapid Gut Reset, where we teach you about all these environmental exposures and how to take back control over your digestive health. And it's a light bulb, you know, every week going off for people. And it's a really supportive community. So that's fun. We also have Rapid Liver Reset for folks that know that bile flow is an issue and they really want some targeted support there. So that's a real joy to share as well.
Love it. That's great. And we will, and then is there a main website or something like that that we want to point
to? Yeah, detoxrejuvenation.com is a great place where you can go check us out. And also get on the wait list for anything that you'd like to be a part of.
Perfect. Okay. So I will make sure I link to those in the show notes, and you can find all the resources, show notes, everything I mentioned here today and that Sinclair mentioned here today over at bonecoach.com/Sinclair Canale Detox Rejuvenation. I want to thank everyone again so much for your time. If you found this helpful, be sure to like, share, comment, share it with somebody you love that you know needs to hear this, because I know there were some nuggets dropped in here that some people are probably struggling with some of these issues. They need to hear this. So be sure to share it with them, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Hope you found this episode of the Bone Coach Show helpful. You can find all the resources, show notes, everything mentioned over at bonecoach.com. If you enjoyed this episode and found it helpful, be sure to share it with someone you love, a friend, family member, even a group of people. And also be sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode that can help you improve your bones, your health, and your future. One last reminder, if you haven't done so already, head over to bonecoach.com for more great resources to help you get on the path to stronger bones and an active future. I'm your Bone Coach, Kevin Ellis. I'll see you in the next episode.